Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. This is not the X-Files. We are not scientists. We are not mathematicians. We are certainly not school teachers. We are no experts. We are paranormal investigators who have come together to give our audience insight and educational subjects about the paranormal field. Join us live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Without further delay, here are your hosts, Matthew J. Haas, and his partner in crime, Tim Vickers.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Paranormal Talk Radio. And I am your co-host, Matthew J. Haas, and alongside me, as always, my partner in crime, Mr. Tim Vickers. How you doing, Tim?
Good. How are you?
All right. Doing great. Doing great.
Ready for another fun episode.
Yes. We always have fun episodes.
We do. It is good. It's fun.
I look forward to every Friday night, let me tell you. we have a great guest tonight. His name is Christopher DeCesare. I'm always used to pronouncing it another way. I'm used to pronouncing it as DeCesare. I guess it depends on, you know, the nationality or you know, your nationality and how you pronounce names, but DeCesare is his last name. He is the author of the book Surviving Evidence. He's also best known for making an appearance on the sci-fi hit show School Spirits. I don't know if the show's coming back or not, but I guess we can ask Chris later if he's allowed to, you know, say if it is or not.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great guy. I'm actually really honored and proud that Paranormal Talk Radio and myself are going to participate in a big event that's taking place in October. It's the C2D1 Hawking 30th Anniversary event at SUNY College up in Geneseo, New York, at Erie Hall. It's a big event. It's a free event. And Paranormal Talk Radio is very excited to support this event. I'm actually going to be speaking at this event, so I'm very honored to do that, and it's real exciting because, I haven't, you know, spoken at an event in a while. I mean, I have experience, but it's been a while, so I don't know. I guess it's kind of like riding a bike, then. You know?
Yeah. What's the worst that could happen?
So
you'll have to get a suit, get all, like, you know, all dressed up, represent.
Yeah. So I'm excited for that. And it's being put together by the college, and that's where he had his paranormal experiences. And it also inspired the movie Please Talk With Me. Was, you know, inspired by his paranormal experiences. Basically, Chris had an attachment, spirit attachment at his college that seemed to, a lot of the activity focused around him, and actually also his college roommate, and that's what his book's about. And, I don't want to give away too much. I want him to share it with the listeners and everybody else, so it'll be good to talk to him again.
Very good. It'll be really good.
Anyway, so I had a rant this week, Tim. I don't know if you've seen it this morning, but one thing that's been bothering me a little bit is I noticed recently people are taking a lot of things that get put out on the social network at face value.
Yeah.
And it really slays me, like, how much people want to believe so badly. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with wanting to believe in something, but they're not, like, seeing the facts, like, they're in between the fine print. And when they're, like, say, like, for example, you know, there's a video and, you know, there's this, well, the whole Charlie thing, that thing exploded out of proportion. you know, we talked a little bit about it the last time with Kenny Biddle, and, you know, it turns out that actually was a publicity stunt for a big movie that's going to be coming out later on in the summer. And, you know, they came forward about it and they said, you know, yeah, it was a you know, a publicity stunt for them. Well, I mean, they nailed it. It worked. You know, everybody and their mother jumped on that thing. And, you know, but it, before the truth came out, everybody was like, oh, you know, I can't believe that, you know, people are calling demons out, you know, with two number two pencils.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you know. I'm still not past, you know, I guess this is somewhat akin to it, but, you know, I still get lost in the whole Ouija board thing. You know, I look at the cardboard and I look at the little plastic pointer thing, and I just don't know how a toy company printed up, you know, a portal to hell. You know, out of plastic and cardboard. And I'm not really sure how people buy into that. And I'm really not sure how crossing pencils and putting yes or no on some paper is, you know, I'm kind of like you, you know. I'm not sure where the leap goes other than I can, you know, I can see it for entertainment, a lot of fun. Kids do it. They get scared. That's part of some growing up stuff, I guess. You know, even I did that stuff. I was a kid, not the pencil stuff, but I guess the confusion for me is when people believe it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, what is that? What is that bridge? What is the gap that I miss seeing where people believe it? But other than that, for fun, I completely understand.
I mean, I'm not against people having fun. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to be a downer on these things that go viral on social networking,
mm-hmm.
Or on YouTube, wherever they put it. My whole thing is, I think the intent should be known from the beginning, and I think it's the intent that bothers me the most about it. Is these people, you know, put these things out there, and they're not explaining what their intent is, and you know, they're making a lot of people think that they should believe in what they're putting out there. And I think that's the part that bothers me the most about it. You know?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I had to keep saying, what are you going to do? You know? Yeah, what are you going to do? I mean,
it's always going to happen.
If your lot in life is to be led, if your choices in life are to be governed by what you see on Facebook, you know, or social media, you know, sooner than later, you'll figure it out, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, my whole big thing right now is, like I said, the whole face value thing. I think it's important to investigators to kind of, you know, if you want to be serious about your line of work and you're passionate about researching and investigating, that not to take everything at face value. And in my rant today, if you read it at all, you know, one of the analogies I came up with, which I thought was a really good analogy of, like, where I thought the problem is with this, is, all right, anybody watch the hit show on History Channel, Porn Stars, right, with Rick and Chum and his son Corey, and they got the grandfather sitting at the desk. You know, it's a pawn shop, and they buy and sell things on an everyday basis. That's their business.
Mm-hmm.
Rick came forward and he said, you know, and he says it quite often to a lot of his customers. And he says, you know, and I think it was a great statement. He's like, the day that I start trusting my customers is the day that I lose my business.
Mm-hmm.
So he can't take, you know, people that are strangers to him that walk in through the door at face value, because, you know, there's a lot of fakes out there. And if there's a day that he buys an item, you know, or, you know, accepts an item for his business, and he goes to try to pawn that off as something legit, and then he finds out that it's wrong, that would totally hurt his business. So, So that's kind of the analogy I used in my rant. I don't know if it was a good analogy, but I thought it was pretty good. What do you think of that, Tim?
I think it's pretty good. I if you're going to buy stuff just on the word of the person, then, you know, kind of like I said, that kind of stuff tends to, I think, for the majority of the people, work itself out. At some point or another, unless you are really just, you know, soaked into confirmation bias kind of stuff, or you don't want to know that you got tricked, at some point or another, people just, I think the majority of the people will eventually get burned once or twice too many times and begin to use better filters for what they'll accept and not accept.
Yeah. You know, it's just, you know, like you said, you know, we've brought up many times on many episodes where, Tim, a lot of people just want to so strongly believe in something that they'll accept their belief over the actual facts. And, you know, that, like, I don't know, it just kind of, you know, it kind of bothers me a little bit, you know, especially if, like, a lot of researchers and investigators expect the field to be taken more seriously, or if we want to gain more respect from others. I just think that, you know, it should be important to not accept everything at face value.
Yeah. Even what we say.
Yeah, and by all means, you know, again, our show is, you know, the reason me and Tim got together is we want to just share our experiences. We're not experts in any way, and I don't claim to be, and I know Tim doesn't. And in my opinion, everything we do in the paranormal community is a learning experience, you know? And, you know, I just think learning and sharing that education is really important, you know? And I'm a firm believer in proper method and critical thinking, you know, and I think that's where you should start.
Yeah, well, if I just get people either so upset at me that they, you know, question themselves, then I feel good.
Right.
You know, just keep throwing out questions. And, you know, if you keep questioning it, at some point you'll get called a few names, but if you keep doing it, and hopefully someone will run into that brick wall, will run into the wall themselves and see the limitation, and kind of maybe start to alter their way of thinking. You know, I had a nice rant this weekend. Since we're kind of talking on rants. And I kind of got I got a little confused. I kept seeing a lot of use of the word energy, and I want to know, like, what kind of energy. When people say energy, the ghost sucks the energy out of the battery. Well, what energy? How did they take the energy out? How did they transform the energy from the battery into a mechanical type of energy, or an audio, or a verbal type of energy, so that they could either manipulate the environment or make a sound? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then there was a paranormal energy. You know, that's an energy that I heard this week, and I fully kind of understand what people say. You know, they talk about paranormal energy and energies around great places of death or destruction or emotional energy. What is emotional energy? What is it? Like, I hear that a lot, but what is it? And that's, people will say, well, that's the energy that your body exudes when you're excited. But what is it? You know, it's easy to say that's what it is, but what is it? When you measure it, what are you measuring? And so it's not that I'm saying it's not real, but I'm saying, before you just go and say, this place is full of, you know, paranormal, black, evil energy, what is it?
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I kind of thought about that this week, and I would like someone to tell me, you know, what is this energy? You know, I know mechanical energy, you know, electromagnetic energy, light energy, sound energy, compression, stretch, thermo, nuclear. What did I leave out?
Well, the way I was brought up, and the research that, you know, I've come across and the things that I've read, you know, I don't have a science background or major or anything like that, but I know scientists do believe and theorize that everything is made up of energy. But I think as investigators and researchers in the field that we're in, it's hard to really decipher what kind of energies that we're dealing with. So in a way, you know, I don't know if I'm stirring off the topic here a little bit, but like for me, like how does one really decipher what type of energy you're dealing with? Like, for example, like a lot of people are so quick to jump the gun on calling everything evil or a demon or dark energy or you know, whatever they want to call this energy. You know, there's always a name for something out there. And I want to know, like maybe it's just I don't have enough understanding of that realm, the spiritual realm of that area, or am I naive because I don't know enough? You know what I'm saying? Like, I just think it's so hard to kind of, like, I don't know, like, kind of call it anything, you know, except for just energy, you know?
Yeah, well...
Did I make sense, or did I just, like, totally botch your...
Well, it just, my point is, what if it's not even energy? Like, what if it's something that you're not even, that you don't even know what you're dealing with, that has no definition? So if you don't know what it is, then why give it a value?
Right.
In other words, it's your best guess. If you say, well, it's my best guess that it's some type of energy, I don't know what it is, but somehow this energy is used. I like that a lot better than telling me that it is a dark energy, a paranormal energy, an energy that manifests from a third plane of existence. You know, really, do you know that? You know, are you sure about that when you tell me that? Or is that what you tell me because that's what you were told? Or did you do research through, you know, university, that you found out that there is this new type of energy that we haven't identified yet, and it's called ghost energy? You know, how do you get that? And so my issue with just the use of energy is not so much that I don't think it's possible, because I don't. It's the use of defining something that you don't know what it is. And when you define something, when you normalize in a nomenclature of our community,
right?
And all it takes, really, honestly, I mean, let's be honest, all it takes for some, probably a lot of people in our community, to accept a word is to hear it used a lot. Whether or not they understand it or not, it will become commonplace. Nobody will ask, where did this come from? Not well, but some will ask. So it's the caution of, before something has a value added to it, as if it is real, I think it should be well noted that it is just a guess. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with just a guess. I mean, there's nothing wrong with just a guess. That's a beautiful thing.
I know where you're going with that, and I think maybe it's perhaps like, just for over the years, just like how we've been brought up in religion, I think this is kind of like how we've been brought up, you know, in the field, and just that these theories and hypotheses and whatever you want to call it have always been out there. So people just, you know, think that that's what it is. You know, and my argument, and I agree with you, Tim, like how do we know for sure to call them ghosts? Like where was the person that claims that what we're dealing with is a ghost or a spirit, or, you know, like who, how do we really know what we're communicating with on the other side? You know, like, what is the other side? Like what is the actual meaning of the other side? Like, we have the, you know, like, science, you know, and it's constantly arguing with us. You know, there's no real proof of all that. So how are we why are we labeling all this stuff as this or that? Like, kind of what you're saying, you know, like, why are we valuing, you know, all these things if they're not really proven? And I don't know if the day will ever come in our lifetime that we'll actually get that far, but I don't know. I'm agreeing with you 100%, Tim.
Well, I think the other drawback to labeling something is we're giving it value or giving it validity or credibility without actually knowing is when it becomes commonplace that, you know, what you're dealing with is ghosts or what you're dealing with is are demons. When that becomes common, when that becomes a cultural norm, whether it's true or not, if you stumble upon an actual truth, you know, if somebody comes along and says, holy cow, I think I figured out what these ghost things are. If that happens because the wrong definition is so accepted socially and culturally, the truth will be dismissed. You know, it will be, for many, it will be dismissed. And, of course, this is just my thought. But it will be overlooked, and it will be turned away. And what if the truth of what ghosts are, demons are, spirits are not as cool or not as fun or not as TV-invoking, you know, episode-getting awesomeness, you know, for lack of a better word? What if it's just something kind of boring? You know, what if it's, you know, what if it's not so exciting? But it's the truth. And sometimes the truth is not very flashy. It's not very fun. It's just sometimes dull. But to have the truth is to have the truth. And if it's not as exciting as dark creatures lurking in the corners of dark halls and 200-year-old houses that are wanting to eat your soul, I guess, you know, who's going to believe it? You know, who would want to believe it? And I think that's another pitfall of giving something a value when you don't know what that value is.
Exactly. And it's somewhere along the same terms of taking things at face value also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you don't know what something is, and because it's the current trend or current terminology of the field or a definition that's been used by many, so therefore it becomes the thing or the value of that thing.
Yes. Shall we mention, should we just go ahead and say orb?
Yeah.
I mean, for the love of Pete, how long has orb, you know, that was a ghost, you know? And I can remember starting in this so many years ago, and people would say, well, it's an orb because the orb is the simplest form of energy. An orb is the simplest shape in nature. So since it's so, I mean, I was like, you know, I was eating that up. And later on I thought, why was I eating that up? You know, so what if the orb is the easiest shape? You know, what if it is the most natural shape in the universe? You know, what if surface tension amongst, you know, different electrons, once you turn them loose in a weightless or a gravitationalist environment, things tend to make a ball. What? So why is that supposed to mean that that's a logical jump to mean that that's the easiest way a ghost could manifest? It's through an orb. And I think it's thoughts like that, it's assumptions like that that lead to a culture. And let's just say it, I mean, ghost hunting, paranormal enthusiasts, I mean, this is a culture. And we have our own use of words, we have our own beliefs, even though they vary within the culture. We still have our own set of values and beliefs and
sure.
and thoughts.
Once it's
accepted, it's hard to dismiss. It's very difficult to dismiss.
I like the way you put that. You know, that it really has become like our own culture, and you know, it has, and we do have our own definitions and terminology. And in my all honest opinion, with the terminology and definitions we have currently, I think the whole, you know, because of technology and because our advancement in the field, and the research has really come a long way since the beginning of all this, I really think should be kind of done over, you know, or thought twice about, you know, possibly using certain terminology and definitions, you know, for certain things. Maybe we shouldn't be using those certain things anymore. I don't know. You know what I mean? Uh-oh. And we are on hold, and I don't know why. I don't know if everybody can still hear me. We're having technical difficulties. Uh-oh, not a good time. And let me see if I can get Tim back on here. Bear with me. I think... this ain't cool. Block Talk just hung up on me. Hello, everybody. We're experiencing technical difficulties. Sorry about that. Block Talk Radio kind of just hung up on us there. Wasn't a human error. It was, I guess, software error. So I'm getting Tim back on as we speak. In a few minutes, we're going to have our guest, a really nice guest, a great gentleman, Chris DeCesare, author of Surviving Evidence, as I'm getting Tim back on here. And I just want to, if everybody is in the chat room, Tim, are you with me?
Yes.
Yeah, Blog Talk kind of just hung up on us.
Hey, I guess I thought it was a demon.
So if anybody's in the chat room lost the audio signal, if they could just hit refresh. I know there's a couple people out there. If they lost the audio feed, just refresh. It wasn't our fault. Blog Talk seemed to kind of hang up on us. So sorry about that. We apologize.
See what happens when I talk about energy? That's what I said. People get upset when I ask about energy.
And that's what it was. Something got upset that you were talking about energy.
Yeah. Like maybe the American Electric Power. They were like, drop this call. Renewable energy hippie person.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, we've been through worse, that's for sure. We've had shows with no audio. We've had shows with no chat rooms. We've had everything happen.
Well, this is the first time with Blog Talk, actually, isn't it?
Yeah. Usually it's human error, but this time it was our host error.
I like Blog Talk though.
Yeah, for the most part, they're pretty good. For what we for service.
Yeah.
So I have no complaints. But anyway, in a couple of minutes, we're going to get our guest on tonight. I'm real excited because, like I said earlier in the show, for those who are joining us late, our guest tonight is Chris DeCesare. He's the author of Surviving Evidence, and he had a spirit attachment during his college years at SUNY College. We're going to be having an event October 17th at Erie Hall in Geneseo, New York. This is the 30th anniversary of this haunting that he had there. And I'm just very honored and proud to be elected to speak at this event. And I want to, again, publicly thank, Cider Productions and, everybody who's hosting this event, including Chris, for giving Paranormal Talk Radio and myself this really great, exciting opportunity. I'm really happy about it. And I want to rush summer, but I wish it was here. So, anyway, without further delay, I guess we'll go ahead and get our guest on. So, are you ready, Tim?
I'm ready.
You sure?
I think. I'm not going to mention anything about demons or energy anymore.
All right. So, without further delay, everybody, I'm going to go ahead and get our guest in here. Bear with me. As we're dialing him in at this very moment, it's dialing, so that's a good sign.
I'm glad I wasn't on my own on that one.
So We're just waiting for Chris to jump on board here on Skype. And as soon as he does, we'll say hello to him. Mr. Tichesore, are you there?
Hello, hello. Hey, Matt. Hey, Tim.
How you doing?
Hey, how are you doing?
Well, I was doing good, but I just got this message from a renewable energy hippie guy. and he said not to talk about energy types on tonight's show, so I had to make that promise. So I apologize if you want to talk about that. I just can't.
Yeah, we had a little hiccup. Fortunately, it's not perfected radio, so it will happen from time to time. We just like cell phones, drop your calls. I guess Block Off will drop our calls once in a while.
Absolutely. The only thing is, he said he knew where I lived, so that concerns me. But other than that, I'm fine.
Well, we don't want that to happen. Well, thank you for, coming on our show again. We've had you on once before, but it's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
We were telling everybody about the book, Surviving Evidence, and, a little bit about your experience during your college years with your attachment. And, and Chris, I've said it to you in many private conversations how much I can relate to that. You know, me and my wife have had our own experience with that. And, I think that kind of, it brought us together and it had us connect to one another. And I think maybe that's why we're meant to work with one another. And here we are today.
Absolutely. It's nice, as you know, when you can take something, an event perhaps that's traumatic or very difficult to work through, and then from that experience make positive things come from it, either by hoping for it, by working for it, or just by coincidence. And I think it's one of the core things about life is when good things happen to good people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to, before we get heavily into the story and your experiences and stuff and the book and whatnot, you have so much going on. You got your plate full right now. You're here, there, and everywhere. And you were recently on Coast to Coast Radio, which is one of the biggest radio networks that there is. And congratulations on that, by the way. And what I want to ask you, Chris, before we get heavily into this is, you've made a really good impact in the paranormal community in a very short period of time. How do you feel about all the things that have been kind of currently going on for you?
Well, it's pretty amazing. I tell my students, because I'm a high school teacher, that, you don't get rich or famous or have notoriety because you want those things. Instead, rather, what you do is you do something you love well. You practice your craft, you hone your craft, and if you do something very well, people respond to it. And then maybe you might get rich or famous or have notoriety, but those things themselves shouldn't be goals. It should be doing what you love and helping people first. And so I've noticed that since I've tried to focus mostly on things like authenticity, decency, and kindness, that it's been returned to me. And, the things have come my way. I didn't work for necessarily in terms of trying to get things done, but the sci-fi show, they called me and said, we want to do a show. And then Coast to Coast said, hey, listen, we heard you have a book. It's getting rave reviews. Come on the show. So, my approach isn't to get out there and say, look at me, but rather just share the experience. And I feel blessed that people are responding to it. And that's the best I can hope for.
Yeah, and they really are, because like I said, you've really made an impact on a lot of people and in the community in a short period of time, and I commend you for that. Let's for those who are unfamiliar with Chris and your book, let's kind of go back in time a little bit. How did you first come about writing your book, and maybe share a brief story about how this journey began?
Sure. Well, the book idea was a recent one. You knew some of the backstory. There was a book written by Reverend Tim Shaw and John Zaffis, Haunted Collector. He did the foreword to it called Please Talk With Me. And that book was done in an investigative style. Mr. Shaw went through as though he heard about this the first time, and he went through and looked at the evidence and interviewed witnesses, and he made a case study book about that. And the movie Please Talk With Me, done by Cedar Productions, Bill Edwards and Mark Atria, went through and gave the audience a step day-by-day experience for what happened to us. And then the sci-fi show happened, and that was, the commercialized version of what happened. And so I was at a convention in Pennsylvania, at Sands Hotel, and Eric Verner, Corpus Nocturnum, who has the publishing company of Dark Moon Press, was next to me at a table, and I said, listen, you know, you should really think about, in your own words, sharing your story. And I said, you know what, maybe you're right, because I'm getting a little older now, and I don't know how long I'll have, and so maybe it's good to put down my experiences, my thoughts, the effects of what happened, and maybe somebody down the road will read that and think, huh, this helps me, or this explains a few things, and learn things I didn't myself as a 19-year-old kid. So, you know, the book idea wasn't my own, but I embraced it because I saw a value in it. And it's funny because it's a pretty comprehensive book. I actually wrote it in 6 calendar days. And that's
wow.
that's usually impossible, you know, but it's hundreds and hundreds of pages. But here's the thing. For 28 years, these events went through my head. And for 28 years, I strained them through and examined them and put them in sequence and tried to prioritize things so that when it came time to write the book, I got a glass of iced tea. I put the 80s music on from the day, and I just sat down. And I said to my kids and wife, just don't bother me. Here I go. And it was kind of cool. I felt like Michelangelo a little bit, you know, up the ladder of Sistine Chapel, not taking any breaks. And I had no idea if it would be good or not. And I was a little nervous about that. And I sent the first chapter to Eric, and he said, this is really good. Keep going. And so I did. And but like anything else, you know, I think if you put your heart into it, no matter what the actual literary quality is or what the grammar is like, as a start, it's good to share an authentic experience. And I had help along the way. You know, a friend named Don Zarilli, you know, who's a poet, and he helped me edit through things. And I'm telling you, it's been a blast. And I'm thankful that things are going well. The Coast to Coast show was a great boon to me because after that show, the Kindle version of my book went to number five on Amazon for ghosts and spirit books. Whereas before that show, it was probably around 13,000. So what an amazing thing. And I know now that people across the globe will be able to read through my experience, and that makes me really happy. As far as the experience itself, I was a teenager, and I went to college, and I wanted to actually be an Olympic runner in the marathon. But just in case, I went to college in case I got hurt or something happened. And my second year of college, I was living in it was actually SUNY Geneseo State School. I was living in a dorm called Erie Hall. And it was in room C2D1. And in January of my second year, Ed and Lorraine Warren came to town. And they were famous demonologists. Probably your listeners have heard of her and him. And they gave a symposium, a presentation. And it was interesting because while she was speaking, Lorraine, she kept looking in my direction and talking about sensitivity and like attracts like, all these thoughts. And when the presentation was over, we could meet them, and she wouldn't shake my hand. And she said to me, I'm not going to shake your hand. I don't want to know my future. And this really confused me because I didn't know what she was talking about. And I was almost insulted, like, gee, you got the wrong person here. I'm sorry. And afterwards, they're going to go on this campus ghost hunt to see what they could find on the campus. And my friend Jeff wanted to go. And I'm not going with them. They're mean to me. They're rude. You know, it's kind of funny. And afterwards, we talked a little bit, and Jeff thought maybe she sensed something in me. Maybe she thought something's going to happen. And, of course, about a week and a half later, I begin to hear these voices in my room. The next day, I see this thing standing in my room. Paul begins to see this. You begin to hear it, and it explodes. It explodes like a supernova across the campus, you know.
Wow. How did the campus so far, what was their reception like when this was all coming about and in the beginning of things, how did they handle the situation with you and when it kind of first word got out about it?
Well, very different over time. Back in the 1980s, and Brian J. Cano, the Haunted Collector, he puts it very well. He said back in the 80s and the 90s, the paranormal was called the occult. It was bad. It was negative. And if you get involved in it, there's something wrong with you. And so back in those days, we couldn't do much about solving it or sharing the word. At the time in the college, my dorm, if I had said there was a ghost, they would have for certain believed I was doing drugs or drinking or something like that. So I really couldn't, with any kind of freedom, explain what was happening. I didn't seek out a priest. The priest blessed the room. I went to a parapsychologist. And, you know, things, I tried to make small steps along the way. But back then, there was no acceptance whatsoever. You know, around 2004 or 2005, you began to see some shows on television dealing with ghost hunting. And I think that type of thing began to allow people to talk about the paranormal and spirituality in that way with more freedom. It made it less of a taboo subject, so that by the time I spoke about the haunting for the first time publicly in 2011, so you're talking 25, 26 years later, it was something you could talk about. And I went back to the college, and I spoke to, surprisingly, a packed auditorium of hundreds of people. So the most ironic thing to me is that while I was mowing my lawn and going food shopping and living my life, thinking everything was gone, this haunting became an urban legend in Western New York, and people would go through the K2 meters, they'd investigate, they'd research. I had no idea that for 25 years, people were looking for the ghost boy of Geneseo. And so when I actually showed up, you know, a quarter century later, there they were, and I was stunned by that. And at that time, you know, a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, it was a mixed reception. The Alumni Association, campus activities, they liked the idea because they knew there was a TV show on the way, coming on the way, a movie was coming on the way. The academia side of it wasn't too kind to it. It's like, well, it could be schizophrenia, paranoia. We don't really celebrate this in a campus of higher learning.
Hmm.
Now, you know, 2015, with the success of the book that I wrote and of the movie and of the TV show, and people thinking, you know what, this seems authentic. Let's celebrate this. Let's learn about this. Now we're invited to the campus. The campus is sponsoring the event in October. So how amazing is that? Not just for me as a person to go from a dark moment to shared acceptance and you know, friendship, but to go from something that was pushed away in a corner because you couldn't talk about it to be invited back to the location to speak and be honored in that way. That's just an amazing thing.
It really is. And not only that, it's also a free event, which – when we talked about the possibility of me speaking at your event, I didn't even know that it was actually free until I looked at the event on Facebook itself, and I was like, wow, I can't believe it's actually free too, because like a lot of these places that put these events together, you know, these conferences and conventions that go on all across the, you know, the country, actually all across the world now, because it's kind of become a really like global phenomenon, you know, the paranormal. And, you know, a lot of them charge astronomical amounts of money for it. And this is where I wanted, like I kind of have, like, the utmost respect for not only you personally, but for the event itself, too, because it is a free event. And you have quite a few respectable people who are going to be supporting the event and helping you. You know, we have John Tobin, we have Chip Reichenfeld, who are going to be having a reunion together there. Mr. Alan Lewis, who is actually in our chat room tonight, I want to thank him for, you know, coming to participate in tonight's episode, which is really cool.
Hello, Alan.
Yeah, he's out there. Bill Edwards is out there to support us too. It's just like an awesome ride, and you know, the amount of people that we have for the event. The rapport is just, I mean, you can't speak bad about anybody.
Well, you know, a lot of the conventions, you know, some are exceptionally run, some not so much. But even most of the good ones, one of the things they do is to draw a crowd, they bring in paranormal celebrities, people you're going to see almost a weekly basis on TV shows or movies and things. And the idea is that if you bring in people who are well-known, it draws a bigger crowd into your event. But because you have to pay the celebrities and house them and give the travel expenses, you have to charge for admission for entry and things like that. So it's a double-edged sword, and that worked pretty well. For this, because I was allowed basically to have a say in some of this, what we decided was, let's make it not about making money or drawing in celebrities, although there are a few present. Let's make it about education. It's a college campus. Let's get speakers who are educated, who are knowledgeable, who are respected, make it free to the public, and invite people in to learn, to open their minds, and to hopefully share what we learned and we experienced in our you know, investigations. So, like you said, it's a very different kind of thing, and I'm very proud that it is.
Yeah, it's something to really be proud about, and it's an achievement in itself. And, you know, again, I can't be more excited to be part of it as well. Paranormal Talk Radio is really excited to be there. Well, let's get a little bit into your story as far as your attachment, because again, I don't speak openly about it that often, but I can relate to your experience because my wife and I had an attachment here at home for almost 2 years, and you know I can so it kind of like touches my heart when I hear about your story over and over, and you know as we're actually my wife is reading your book, she hasn't read it yet, but she's in the middle of reading it, and it's like heartwarming to hear like someone else like going through those other experiences like as much as we have. And where did things like where did you start to notice when like, all right, there's something going on here, like this is paranormal, there's no explanation? What was like the things that said, all right, there's definitely something going on here?
Yeah, you know, there's always some things in our lives or who we are that we can't explain. Usually it's nothing. We hear a sound outside. It could be some small animal. You know, there's a popping noise, maybe a light burnt out. And so, you know, I've never been one to ascribe paranormal understanding to just an event that could be random. And even back then, you know, I'd heard of hauntings before, but it wasn't something like I didn't go out and investigate things. And to me, they're more used by parents at, you know, campouts to get the kids scared to go to sleep, you know, so they have their own private time. But yeah, I began to hear a whispering voice call my name in the dorm room. And it was something along the lines of, and, you know, you're in college, and kids drink, and they have fun, they play jokes. So my guess was that my friends are playing a joke on me just to annoy me because I'm trying to finish this paper, you know. And I heard it a few times, and I went to the door, and no one was in the hallway. I went to the window, and no one was outside. And I thought, wow, this is a pretty good joke. Maybe they had drilled a hole in the wall or something like that. I didn't know what it was, but I want to finish my paper because this is important. It's college. And I put headphones on. My roommate Paul had headphones, the big old 80s clunky kind. And I put a CD in the player, and it was Voice of America, Sammy Hagar, I Can't Drive 55, you know, and I played it loudly. And I thought, that's that. The joke is over. And by the second refrain, I heard in the headphones over the music, Chris. And I thought, oh, my God. And I threw him on the ground. I thought, now how is that possible? There's no way they could not use a stereo. There's no way they could rig the stereo. This is impossible. So I turned the music off. I ran out of the room, down the hall, out the building to the food court. I had lunch. I ate some food to calm myself down. And, you know, usually it's a practical joke. Someone takes credit for it. You know, it's like, hey, we got you so bad. Come on, admit it. You're scared. Nothing. Let me be upset. Like, come on, people. Take credit for your joke. Nothing. I went to my cross-country and track practice. I came back in the room, and I don't know, things didn't feel right. The door seemed to squeak for the first time. The closet door would open up. The room felt colder. There were breezes. The clock was flashing. And, you know, of course, I try to be logical and think, well, maybe there's a power surge. Maybe someone opened a window in the hallway. Just there are explanations for all those things separately. But because they're happening at the same time, I noticed them. I was concerned about this. And this is around February 11th, 1985, about 12 days after the Warrens came to visit and she wouldn't shake my hand. So I decided, you know what, forget this stuff. I'll take my shower after running and I'll just relax. So I go to the bathroom, which is right across the hall from my room. And for the first time in my life, and I ran high school, cross country, and middle school, and track, and played sports. I probably took 400 showers in these, you know, what they call gang locker rooms, you know. And for the first time in my life, I was afraid to put the water on. And here's why. I thought, gee, if the water from the shower head goes over my head, I can't hear things, and I can't see things. If an attack happens, I'm defenseless. I thought, why am I thinking that? I've been in this college dorm, you know, for, you know, 5 months. Nothing's ever happened. What is wrong with you? Just relax. Something I couldn't understand obviously had me spooked. But I couldn't turn the water on, and about 25 minutes went by. I'm just standing there, shower going, shivering in the air. So I thought to myself, I need a guard, someone to guard me, just in case. And my roommate Paul was coming down the hallway, and I heard him whistling, and I thought, that's good. I'll let him get in the room. He'll settle down a bit. I'll come in the room. We shared the room together. We got changed together and deleted girlfriends together. So no big deal, you know. So I didn't have a chance. He walked in the room. He began to scream. I'm going to censor it because of, you know, we're on the radio, but, oh, shoot. Oh, shoot. Screaming. He came running in the bathroom. He was hunched over. He was gasping for air. His hands are on his knees. He's like, he didn't know I was there because it was quiet. So I said, Paul, he jumped like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm going to take my shower. What's the matter? You won't believe me. If I tell you, you won't believe me. It's crazy. I said, that's fine. Tell you what, you stay there. I'll take my shower. I'll keep you safe. We'll be good. We'll talk later. And so, you know, he kind of guarded me not knowing it. We went back into the room and I said, well, what happened? What's the matter? He said, well, okay. I came in the room before. I put my keys down, my books, and right by my head, I'm like maybe a foot away, I heard a voice and it said, Chris, it called your name. Now, what scared me was, if it's a practical joke, they'd say, Paul. They wouldn't say my name. They'd say his name to scare him. The fact it was saying my name, that was weird to me. However, it could be him playing the joke. It's his stereo. He has the key to the room. He's my roommate. So even though it looked like he was terrified, maybe he's a good actor. I don't know. I didn't believe this thing should happen. So I just said, that is strange. I didn't necessarily buy into what he was saying, at least on the surface. Inside, I was petrified. That evening, we're doing our homework, and he's facing the other direction. He begins to yell at me, stop, stop, cut it out. You're bothering me. I said, what am I doing? He claimed I was blocking his light with my arms as he read. And I was 12 feet away, and when I told him to turn around, he didn't know how to get back to my chair so fast. Then he said, you know, this is freaky. This place is crazy. I'm getting out of here. I'm going to go watch a movie or something. He left the room. So I was by myself in the room. And I was eating these little hot tamale candies made of cinnamon, you know. And as I'm sitting there with the door closed at nighttime, the window's closed, I see a person sitting behind me over my right shoulder. And, of course, that's impossible. I'm facing the door, small little room, no way. When I was a child, I learned to count to 10 when things are stressful. I'm going to count to 10. I'll turn my head. Nothing will be there. I only got to 7. Because I got to 7, I could still see this person standing over my shoulder. So I turned my head. And that's when my life changed. I turned my head and I saw this person standing in the corner of the room by the stereo. The stereo that hours before, through the headphones, I heard my name being called. And it looked like a young man. I don't know if he's 15, 20, 23. But he's wearing a blue and yellow type top. It's like blue kind of leggings or pants on his torso down there, his legs. But the weird thing was his legs were going through the stereo, into the stereo. And I panicked. Not because he looked so scary, but because it's impossible. You know, this can't be happening. And I learned, you know, you can see a planet, Neptune, Uranus, Jupiter, with a telescope. You can see microbes and bacteria with a microscope. You can't see ghosts. They don't exist. And there I was looking at this thing, which was a ghost. And so I screamed. I ran in the hallway going, help, help, help. Because I was afraid, my mind had broken. You know, a racehorse in a race, they break their stride, it's over. I was a marathon runner. I ran marathons, 26-mile races. And you had your carbohydrate intake. You had your pacing, your water consumption. Everything was like a clock making you run at full efficiency. And right then and there, I knew one of two things were happening. Either my mind was broken and I was crazy, or something dead was looking at me. If that was the case, then what else I thought I knew was wrong.
Wow. Did you have anybody that was maybe like close to you that you were telling your experiences to, whether it be your roommate or other people outside of your roommate, that maybe had an inkling as to what was going on, like as far as in relation to like the history of you know, the school? Or did you have like a certain speculation as to who this ghost was? Or,
well, unlike today where you have, I don't mean to be trite about it, a paranormal ghost hunting group every 3 blocks, you know,
yeah,
and where everyone can tell you what a K2 meter is and, you know, how things work nowadays and theories of ghosts. Back then, it wasn't that way. To suggest there was a ghost could bring on a negative reaction. They could shun you. They could laugh at you. And so I was very cautious. But here's what I knew. I knew that if I was going crazy, I would need treatment. If I wasn't going crazy, I would need to define what's happening, because even if it was some kind of ghost, I want to live and survive in comfort and look for patterns of behavior and things like that. And so on the second day of the haunting, I reached out to a gentleman, a student who was down the hall from me, named John Jeff Unger. And the reason that happened was because he was the first door I came to. And I banged the door, and I explained to him I had panicked and that there was this ghost in the room. And I got lucky because, you know, this type of thing intrigued him. And he agreed, and he wanted to record, like a journal, every day what I was experiencing, what I was hearing, what I was seeing, for two reasons. One, if I was going insane, I could bring that to a therapist or a psychiatrist, and they could say, oh, this is called that, here's a treatment for it, let's get started. Mm. Or if I wasn't going insane, if there's something dead in the room, what's it doing? What does it want? How do we deal with it? How do we prove it's there? And because it's such an emotional experience for me, Jeff felt that time would help me understand. So if you have an experience now, by the following day, your emotions are calmed down, look at what happened and try to draw meaning from that. And so, but not my roommate, because our roommate and I didn't want to jeopardize our friendship, and I was afraid it frightened him worse. So 2 days later, when Paul said he saw something in the room, he had no idea what I had seen. I didn't share that with him. And I asked him very cautiously, what do you see? I don't want to put words in his mouth, you know?
Yeah.
And he said, I see this young man's kid in front of me with a tilted head, which is exactly what I saw. When he said that, independent of my experience, then I knew it was external, which is gratifying because I'm not going crazy, but it's worse because that suggested to me that ghosts, which don't exist, existed, and this dead thing was calling my name, watching me sleep, following me around in my room.
That must have felt good to you, though, like knowing, you know, someone else, you know, saw what you saw without having to put any, you know, misconception or power suggestion in their head before, you know, telling them what you experienced. You know, that must have, like, felt good. They're like, all right, I'm not going insane.
Well, it was gratifying that I didn't find myself in a case of mass hysteria or delusion. And you probably heard of these things before where people go into an old haunted house and one person says, look, over there, a mist. The person, where? Right over there. Yeah, I think I see the mist. Wait, I see a hat on the head. Do you see the hat? Yeah, I think I see a hat. It's Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln! Put it on Facebook. You know, it's so easy to just try to understand things right away and prove you're a good investigator. That I didn't want to fall into that trap because it wasn't for me a concept. This thing was in my room and it was real. And to draw a wrong conclusion, to take an improper action, to me I felt could be very deadly, very dangerous. And so I was super cautious, like in a marathon. In a marathon, if you run the first 13 miles too fast, you hit the wall, you're not going to finish. You have to pace yourself. And so with Jeff's help, with the journal notes, and as we began to collect evidence, we were trying to pace ourselves, not to a marathon finish, but to an understanding of what was going on around us.
Right. I want to really help you, Chris, with, you know, obviously, because we're also part of the event, but we want to, like, help promote this event because we really want to get it out there. And, you know, that's the whole point of us kind of being part of it. But, like, if you can, like, go down the list of people that are participating in the event, maybe you can share with our listeners, like you know, which person, how they're connected to you and why you chose that, you know, specific person to kind of, like, be elected to be part of the event.
Absolutely. Mr. Alan Lewis, who I believe is in the chat room, this is a special guest speaker for me. He was the first individual to share the events with that didn't actually take part in them in college. And I met him through Jeff, who wrote the journal notes, a few months after the haunting took place. And there is something about the way in which he was searching for information, the way in which he really seemed to care about what we went through, that allowed me to just begin to share with him the events without the usual caution that I had. And it was helpful to me and very important because he was the very first person to allow me to share without ridicule, without condescension, without fear of being embarrassed. And that stamp of approval was huge for me. And Jeff understood and Paul understood. People in the haunting knew it was real. They accepted what we're talking about. But to have an outside person who was intelligent, you know, who was aware of things, to look at these evidences and hear our explanations and you know, and say, you know what, this is interesting, let me research this. That was huge for me. And he was the only person, this happened 9 years later, to track down the priest, Father Charlie Mann, who did the blessing, to track down Paul, my roommate, who fled 9 years later, and talk to them and ask them about what they did and why they did it. And it actually helped me years later understand, oh, so that's why the priest said that. That's why Paul left so quickly. So to have him there is an amazing opportunity, I think, for people who like reading about the haunting, and also for someone like me who feels honored to know someone who you know, invested so strongly in us right after the events occurred. So that's a great thing. Chip Reichenthal and John Tobin, they had a radio show on Para X and A1B called Keeping the Spirits Alive, KTSA.
It was a great show.
It was one of the best ever. It was Monday nights. It was at 8 o'clock. And I didn't want to miss it because it was kind of like Mike and Mike in the morning.
Yep.
You know, it was just the rapport was incredible with the T-Rex and Para X. And they both had a unique style. They both had a unique purpose in what they did. And really, I met them at, I believe it was Scaricom, when I first began talking about these things. And they had never heard of the events like most people. And I remember them saying, what was it, the R2-D2 haunting? And I like the sense of humor because you need that. You have to laugh sometimes. And when we talked to them, meaning myself and Jeff and everybody else, they were kind. They were intelligent. They were supportive. They did a lot to help in the early days, help give an opportunity for myself and Jeff others to a forum for speaking. They invited me to the Pastry Cons. They put me on their radio show, not because it would draw listeners per se, but because they believed in what we were saying and wanted to be one of the good guys and promote things that are authentic. So I'm in their debt. And, you know, they stopped working together on these things because John took a hiatus from the paranormal. So in October, it's the first time in a year and a half, almost 2 years, they'll be on the same stage together. So that's a blessing.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. I can't wait for that. That's going to be exciting. And in a way, that's kind of how we met. We met through them and, you know, through A1B. And, you know, we had you on as a guest through there first. That was, I believe, your first appearance on our show.
Correct.
And I don't know, we kind of hit it off since then.
Well, and see, that's the thing. And I mentioned before, about 20 minutes ago, that the idea is not necessarily to get superstars from TV. That's okay if they want to come. but more so just exposure. We wanted to have people there who would add to the conversation. It's a school. And, in fact, we'll be in the location where, you know, I took my tests, my exams, in the location where Ed and Lorraine Warren first talked about ghosts that I heard. You know, so it's amazing that it's almost like things go full circle. Speaking of full circle, orbs. You know, orbs are very
there you go, Tim.
Good segue, right?
Yeah.
Orbs are a very controversial subject. There are folks, just like the paranormal, who believe that's nothing more than an exposure problem. It's dust on a lens. It's a bug flying by. To the other side, saying these are actually souls about to form who are conversing, drawing energy into a larger form or spectrum. And then in the middle of this question of, well, what are they? During the haunting, it was so hard for me to express to people what I was going through. And more often than not, when I did try to do that, people would look at me as though I had three eyeballs, two heads, and perhaps some kind of IRS stamp in my hand. It wasn't always pleasant. And I thought it'd be interesting perspective to have Mr. Dave DeLeese, who has, over the past few years, become known for the orb photography, to explain what it is he does, why he does it, what his theory is, and how he wants to support that theory. I think it's fascinating. And since it's a college, you know, most colleges ask questions. They challenge you, you know, philosophy and psychology. What better place than here for him to express what's happening, for us to question those things and, you know, make our conclusions about that? I want people to learn and question. That's what I did back in those haunting days.
Cool.
And you know, we progress further. Mason Winfield. Mason Winfield, an educator, He wrote one of the very first books I ever read on the paranormal called Haunted Rochester. And he is so well-versed in Western New York lore, history, and the Native American beliefs in the early colonial times That was a coup d'etat for me, and I owe John Tobin a favor, because although I knew Mr. Winfield on, you know, from Facebook or and passing by, I never really had – I'm kind of a shy person because it doesn't seem like that. I never go up to people and say, hey, you are and I am.
You don't seem shy at all.
Well, if I'm talking to someone I know like yourself, I'm pretty good. But my friends can tell you that at first I'm hard to get out of my shell. Once I'm out of the shell, look out. But it's like the egg breaks, now goes the yolk. That's me.
Yeah.
But Mr. Winfield has agreed to be a part of this symposium. And that's amazing because he can lay the groundwork for the history of the events. What happened by the torture tree, what happened at the Escalade, what happened in the area. And he can help set the stage for not just what happened to me back in 85, but for the tour of the campus and the ghost hunt later on in the evening. So that adds that historical element to the symposium, which I think is good to have too.
Sure.
You know, then there's Mr. Mark Henry. And Mr. Henry was the first, he emceed the very first event that Jeff and I spoke at in public at the college years ago when it first went public. He'd spoken to Mara Katria, the director of Please Talk With Me, and to Mr. Edwards. And it's fitting, I think, and appropriate that now we're coming back, almost like a Rolling Stones tour years later, you know, but this time in full force and confidence and hits behind us. We reached out to him, and he's agreed to reprise his role as the MC for that day, which – so we went from me being too scared to talk, flipping a coin, saying, heads, I got to talk, to now we're celebrating these events publicly and confidently with good people around us. So Mr. Mark Henry is the MC. Paul Davey, he belongs to the Fab Five. It's a group that does Beatles songs, won many awards. He's played with internationally renowned artists and recording artists, like people from Badfinger and things like that. And guess what? He was in the dorm in the college back during the haunting, and I knew him back then. And he happened to see the episode of Sci-Fi on TV. He's put up the channel. He's like, I know that guy. And so 28 years later, we reconnect, and now he's an accomplished, very well-known musician. And he actually talked to me and my parents the day I left college after the haunting.
Wow.
So like 10 days after the haunting ended, he was talking to me. And he's agreed to give a concert, give this free concert and sing the songs from the day. And how cool is that? So someone I knew during the haunting who had heard about these things can vouch for that. Now is internationally known. He's going to be playing for us during the evening. And then there's somebody by the name of Matthew. I don't know how to say that. There's an H, a couple A's in there. Seems some Dutch kind of vowel name going on there, like a Haagen-Dazs. Now, here's the thing. Of all these people I've mentioned, I've had the least face-to-face time with this Mr. Matthew Haas. However, in the time I've spoken to him in terms of on radio shows, in terms of chats and on Facebook, I've been impressed by his character. I've been impressed by his goals. I've been impressed by his professionalism. And I thought, how can I give an opportunity? Because I was given opportunities, and I've made the most of them because I tried to respect people. If there's one person I could find to get on a stage, to get out there to expose, to have people say, wow, who is this guy? Where has he been? Let's get more of him. I wanted Matthew Haas. You know, I think he's a great human being. You probably know who he is. And I'm thrilled he accepted the invitation because I want to try to be a springboard for more exposure for him to do the good he does in this field.
That's awesome. I really appreciate the kind words. And, you know, I just, you know, I have no words. Thank you so much.
Hopefully do in October.
Yeah. No, I'll be on stage and I'll be frozen.
It's a good song.
I'll do you proud. I really will. So
I know that. And like I said, you know, I'm a school teacher. I'm an old guy now. I've been through a haunting like you. And one thing that experience teaches you is to look for certain things in people that allow you to trust. And brother, I can't wait.
Yeah, no, I can't either. And I wish Tim could participate in there as well. But you know, fortunately, like that's what's great about radio. Like, you know, you could like I'm here in New York and he's down there in West Virginia, and we can come together and put together like you know a rocking show from like two different states. And you know, that's the great thing about all this. You know, I can do radio like in my pajamas and nobody would even know.
Oh, we'll know. There's drones out there. We'll know.
Yeah. So I hope everybody can be prepared for my warped sense of humor too. So,
well, I think a sense of humor is good, and I have the same. So,
But we're also looking forward to it. I know me and Chris have been rambling on, and I always leave Tim in the dust in the background sometimes. But he is my partner. He is my radio co-host. Tim, do you have anything to add to Chris's experiences or what we've been talking about?
I'm good in the dust. You're a great host. I'm a great co-host. That's how it goes.
He's in the orbs. I can see him now. He's in the orbs.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, you know, only the good, what is it, was the good fairy of the north that traveled
Glinda?
The north?
Glinda, yeah.
Glinda, yes. The only question I had, and I enjoy listening to this every time, you know, both times, I love listening to you. And you call yourself an old guy, but you do not sound old.
Isn't that weird? When I was on Coast to Coast two nights ago, a caller actually called in, and what he said was, "You sound young. I'm a voice expert. I do analysis of voice. You sound young." And I'm like, "Well, I don't feel too young. Thank you. I don't know. I suppose because I'm a teacher, I'm constantly talking and lecturing and things like that. So maybe I kept my vocal cords in shape. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know. Maybe in a couple of years,
I know what it was.
Like this.
It was all that running.
maybe, or like screaming in college, help me. You know, people say that all the time, and I actually look younger than I'm supposed to, too, which is odd when you want to buy a drink. But, you know, and maybe it's my enthusiasm. Maybe because people sense I love to share when I can. I like talking to people, and maybe that gives me that, you know, that, I don't know, that zest for life. But I guess I do sound young, but trust me, I'm in my fifth decade, or maybe it's the sixth one. I don't need to do that, but I'm 50, so, you know, but...
Yeah,
well, I'm close. I'm close to you.
Yeah. You're far from it, like, as far as, you know, your looks. You look much younger.
Yeah, I suppose that's good. I'll get in the movie theater for free maybe next time.
So one of the questions I want to ask you, Chris, is after you left college and after having those experiences, did you have any other experiences after that time period?
Yes. I didn't want to, but sometimes in life it gives you things you don't want to have. You have to deal with those. The haunting ended, to my knowledge, around the end of April when I confronted this thing in the room. I mentioned I spoke to Paul Davey the day I left from college, you know, week after that, on May 6th. My family and I went on a vacation together. It's like in the movies where people have to, you know, where's grandma on the roof. We went down to Virginia Beach, not too far, I don't think, for where Tim is. And there's a place called Colonial Williamsburg. And it's a reconstructed town or city.
I'm going there next week.
Yes, we were there. And there's this giant mansion house where just before that, François Mitterrand, Margaret Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, Helmut Kohl, the G7 had met to go over policy. And my mom knew I loved history, and I was a big political buff and fan of these things, and knew my politicians. So we went to this location, and she wanted me to pose by this big table in front of a big mantelpiece where the negotiation had taken place. So I thought, that's cool, make mom happy, I'll do that. So I'm standing in this location, and as she's getting her camera ready, it's one of those old 110 things where you push the button real hard, it doesn't always go down, I hear this ringing sound like a grandfather clock, three times, bong, bong, bong. Then I hear this high-pitched female scream going from left to right in front of me. Ah! And I see this hair fly by, I'm like, what the heck? My mom goes, say cheese. I'm like, cheese, like a nervous smile. So after that happened, I said, did you hear that? What? No one had heard a darn thing. Whatever. So, you know, back then it wasn't digital media. You had to take that film, get it developed, you sent it away to Rhode Island someplace, and you get doubles prints, and 2 weeks later they come back from Rhode Island. And so August, almost a month later, the film comes back, developed film. And there's the picture, and there I am. I'm all standing stiff with a nervous smile. You see three clock faces floating in the air by my head at 3 o'clock, just like the bell would have rang, and the back of a woman's hair and dress leaving the picture, at the edge of the picture. Just like I said, my mom was like, oh, my God, that's exactly what you said. So, yes, and the priest and the parapsychologist both told me during the haunting, and I don't want to hear it, that I am probably sensitive. And that it's likely, to prepare myself, that this haunting wouldn't be isolated and that I might find myself involved in these things in the future. I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to believe it. But that was the first step on the road to accepting the fact that, yep, whether you like it or not, these things are probably going to happen. learn to deal with it.
Right, right. And, like, did you ever think, like, during these experiences that you might have, you know, sometimes some people have, you know, a gift or an ability, we call them maybe sensitive, or they do have the possibility or potential to be a medium or a psychic. Did any of those, like, things come across your mind at all, or?
Oh, sure it did. In fact, the parapsychologist, Dr. Kessler, he did one of these tests on me with these, I think they're called Zener cards.
Mm.
They're like playing cards, but they don't have kings and queens. They have like star and running water and it's really weird. And so she said to me, I want to do a test. I'm like, oh, please, I'm telling him my test it is. I can't, no more tests. I'm going to let you down too. Because during the haunting, I couldn't focus. I was failing my classes. I wasn't running anymore. I was collapsing. And so all I want to do now is embarrass myself again. He said, listen, just try it. And so he put these cards face down. And he said to me, I'm going to take a card. I'm going to pick it up and not show it to you. I'm going to look at the card. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to put it on my forehead. And I want you to tell me what card I am thinking of or what card I'm holding. However you want to do it. I'm like, this is so embarrassing. So I figured, you know what? I'll just guess real quick. I'll end it in like 30 seconds. I'll be done. I'll go eat some breakfast. So he puts the card to his head. I just blurt something out, you know, circle. Card to head, just blurt something out. I'm just blurting things out just almost carelessly, not even concentrating. So after about 7 or 8, maybe 9 cards, he stops. And he looks at his paper because he's keeping track of these lines. He said to me, that's interesting. Said, what's interesting? He goes, you got everyone wrong. I'm like, see, I told you. thanks for, I got no confidence. I got everyone, but you don't understand. The chances of that are so slim to get all these wrong, it never happens. Getting them all wrong is almost the same as getting them all right, to a degree. He said, but here's the weird thing. Each time I look at my sheet here, every time, all 9 times or 8 times, whatever the number was, it's my mind now, I got the next card. So every single time, I got the card in the pile next. Every time. He called that positive one-step progression. And I said, what is that? He said, for some reason, I might have the capacity to know things in advance. So between Lorraine Warren saying, don't tell me my future, the priest telling me I might have a gift from God. Now, this guy's saying I have this progressive, whatever it's called. I'm thinking, oh, this is great. I don't want this, and now I have this. And so I said to him, please help me. I don't know what this is. I can't explain it. Put this in layman's terms so I understand what you're telling me. How can this possibly work? He said, all right, here's what I'm going to tell you. Imagine you're looking at a body of water. And I tell you there's a boat in the water, but you can't see it. How could I know? How could you prove there's a boat in the water that you can't see? And I thought, I remember from the Hudson River, a boat leaves behind it a wake. A V-shaped wave, on, in a sense, behind it. That's called the wake. Even if you don't see the boat, you can see the effect the boat had in the water once it's passed. He goes, exactly. So you see the effect of the boat in the water once it's passed. You don't see the boat, but you're certain it was there. Right. He said, now, that same boat will lift or displace the water ahead of it. If you're sensitive, you will note the rise in the water before the boat gets there, before it gets there. It's the same principle, just the ability to see that rise is less common than to see the effect afterwards. I'm like, whoa, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wasn't a stupid kid, but I had no reference for understanding what the paranormal was or how it could possibly fit into a logical construct. And for me, that was huge and helped me out a whole lot.
Sure, sure. Well, we're getting actually close to the end here. I can't believe how much time has gone by so quickly. Unfortunately, that's the way that these shows always are. I really wish we had, like, you know, 3 hours just to have, you know, with you on our show. But we're helping promoting the event. Tell everybody where it's going to be, the date, whatever other information you'd like to share with the audience, you know, that those who want to attend, what kind of information can you give everybody?
Absolutely. And you know, I am so honored. This event, this 30th anniversary symposium, to me is like closure. To go back to a place where I thought I was going to die, where one of my student friends actually ended up taking their life, where I was attacked and lying on the ground bleeding, where I thought everything came to a head. To go back decades later to celebrate not just the events, the fact that we might have proven ghosts exist, but the fact that we survived most of it and became better people for it is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So I can't be happier. It's October 17th, it's a Saturday, up at SUNY Geneseo. It's in Geneseo, New York, at the State College. The events are being held primarily in the Newton Lecture Hall, although the college is allowing me and Jeff to take small groups of people to go through the areas where the haunting occurred. We're going to go in Erie Hall, T2D1, A2B2, where the ghost tape was recorded. We're going to be able to take people through the locations for the first time ever where these things happen. You know about the amazing speakers, and there's a Facebook page for it. There's an event page for that. And what we've been trying to do, mostly at Seated Productions, and that's Mr. Bill Edwards, we're going to try to keep people updated as to we're adding more speakers and more events and more vendors. So as that happens, we just need to keep an eye on that. And, you know, it's as you can tell, I'm almost speechless. I'm thinking about you and Dave and Mason and Chip and John, all the people who are, let's face it, you're also, in a sense, volunteering your time. And again, I think it's because you believe in what we're doing. And it heals those old wounds. So lying on the floor, bleeding in the bathroom, to a lecture hall that's going to be filled with 300, 500, 600 people celebrating the search for knowledge. Amen.
I can't wait. I'm going to be nervous and exciting all at the same time.
All of us.
No pressure, Matt. No pressure.
No pressure.
Can you stick Tim in the trunk somehow? If you can get the Amtrak up to, you know, say to Manhattan and maybe Poughkeepsie, you can get him in the trunk and bring him up.
Yeah, they have the auto train. We can maybe figure something like that out.
Oh, I'd love to come.
Yeah, Tim, it's a free event. You guys should try to come up and be there.
I can afford free. That's in my pay range.
So,
on a personal note, I think that speaks volumes about the care of the education and the awareness that you want to give out when you make it free. I don't know. I think that's just a wonderful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, I want to thank you again, as always. I want to send another invitation out to you, actually, Chris, before we hang up on you here.
Sure.
In the middle of summer, I don't know the exact date yet. I'm going to work it out with Tim, but I want to set up another annual Knights of the Round Table, special that we put together once or twice a year. I'm thinking about doing it three times a year because it's just so fun to kind of do. Like,
I've heard great things about that. I have.
Yeah, I've had a bunch of other investigators on, for the Knights of the Round Table thing, and we've shared such a great, like, fun time doing it that, I think having you part of that would be, like, really awesome to us.
Well, if I'm available, I'm there.
Cool. So, Chris, where can everybody find your book?
The book, Surviving Evidence. It's memoir of an extreme haunting. I'm getting better at this, can you tell? It can be purchased at Dark Moon Press, which is the publisher. It can be purchased on Amazon.com as either the Kindle or paperback, or people can contact me through Facebook, and I can sign that for them. And like I said before, I'm just so happy to be given a chance to express what occurred, and I'm so grateful people are putting their hands out saying thank you, and my gosh.
Yeah, you're a great person, and you deserve nothing but, greatness in return. So, it's for a great cause, a great purpose, and, it's going to be fun. I can't wait. Like I said, I don't want to rush summer, so.
Agreed.
I just want freaking warm weather. It's been, like, 50 degrees in the morning and at night here. It's like, holy cow.
exactly right.
Chris, thank you so much again. We'll be in touch, definitely, obviously, because we're going to be working at the event. Enjoy your weekend. And anything else before we say our goodbyes?
Well, I just want to say thank you to Tim. I know he's co-pilot today.
Yeah.
And, that speaks volumes, too, because sometimes in a team or a duo, you have a competition for controlling the microphone or saying, well, why didn't I get to this? And there again, it shows the caliber of people that you are and that you can step aside, take the lead, and go back and forth because of the mutual respect. And that's what I hope to have, too, at the symposium in October.
Yeah, I hope so. So, everybody, I want to, those who showed up in the chat room, Bill, Alan Lewis, and there was a couple other people in there. Thank you so much, guys, for being in the chat. Chris, I'll talk to you soon. And I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks. Be well, guys.
All right, take care.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody. That was Chris DeCesare, the author of Surviving Evidence. If there was any audio issues, I apologize. It was not human error this time.
This time.
Yeah. We're getting pop-up messages from Blog Talk Radio in the studio, Tim. I don't know if you were seeing the same thing.
Yes.
There was something going on, so I don't know if it was affecting the show, but hopefully everybody was able to listen to the show for the most part. For those who didn't hear or you know, missed out on that, but I wanted to thank everybody who tuned in tonight to listen to Chris DeCesare, the author of Surviving Evidence. You can look up his book on Amazon. You know, he's got a website, survivingevidence.com. And, you know, if you Google it, I'm sure there's a lot of places where you can find his book. And, you know, I don't know. It's going to be an awesome event. I can't wait. Tim, hopefully you can go.
Well, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. I don't know. We have no guests next week. I'm sure I'll be able to find somebody. I'll announce it. But, you know.
Yeah, we were on the search, aren't we? We're searching for the same person. Not same person, but the same occupation.
So if there's a scientist or a physicist or a quantum theorist out there that would like to be on our show, that's who we're looking for. you know, it would be kind of fun just to kind of, like, pick a scientist or, you know, physicist's brain about the paranormal and whatnot. You know, it would be kind of fun, you know?
Yes, I can't wait. You know, I've talked to so many people in one of my classes. Well, one of the things that I do, and I like the idea that people have of scientists not believing in the paranormal, as it were, and I find that not so prevalent. Now, granted, I certainly don't have access to all the scientists across the nation, but in the small sample that I do have, a lot of them find it very interesting. And I kind of want to find somebody that has just a flat-out degree out of really, you know, engineering, physics. Of course, you know, we know Dr. Porterfield, you know, that's a medical. You know, he obviously has a great interest in it. And I really like it when scientists have a fascination with it. And I think it goes back to it's a fascination of the unknown. You know, it's a mystery, and I think people that are drawn to mysteries and have this desire to figure out mysteries, I think that they're natural-born scientists. I really do. I do. I think there are more scientists. I think more people in their DNA have the ability to grasp and love science than what they think. And, I think the vast majority of people in the paranormal are natural-born scientists, you know?
Yeah.
But they just don't know it because they look at things, they find a question. They have a question, yeah. And they try to get the tools together. They go out. They take measurements of the environment. They analyze what they have, and they put it out. Now, you know, it's questionable how that goes out. But they're doing, you know, they're doing steps. And that's, I don't know, I kind of get that. I get that. That excites me. That makes me happy.
Definitely.
If we can just get them grants to go to school, that'd be great.
you know, like I always used to say, like, you know, we actually have common goals of a scientist. Like you were saying, you know, we theorize, we hypothesize.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's what scientists do.
Great debates. You're wrong. No, I'm right. Yeah, you know, that's the fun part.
Psychology is involved.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of things that scientists do that we do very similar. And you know, so yeah, I believe that there would be quite a few out there that were, you know, would be exciting to do it. So our search is still on for that. we're on a mission. And
one that will actually come on the radio.
it will happen. I'm determined. I've gotten really good guests on before. We've had, you know, world-acclaimed archaeologist. We had Dr.
That's right. I forgot.
Don't forget. We had him. And we also had the closest to it to a scientist. We had a renowned nuclear physicist and UFOologist, Stan Friedman.
Mm-hmm.
We had him. So it's not impossible.
It's not impossible.
You know, you just got to reach out, and it'll happen to him. I believe.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. So
if I have to go back to school, get a degree in engineering, come back on the show, I'm going to do it.
And then we'll have you on as a guest.
Yes.
So, well, before the end of the show, we always like to make our announcements and stuff, but I don't know, there's nothing much really going on. Once again, I'm plugging the film that I'm going to be producing and making about spirit attachment. So if there are any volunteers, paranormal researchers or investigators that believe that they have something that followed them home from an investigation, they believe that they've had a spirit attached to them from an investigation and they don't know how to handle their situation. I have experience with that from a personal point of view, and you know, I'd be glad to help, you know, in that department to help you out. I want to make a documentary about it. I think I can't imagine how many other investigators that potentially could bring things home with them or believe that they have brought things home with them, because, you know, when we go out on an investigation, you know, psychology can play a big role in your mind. You know, and you could think that you have something going on in your home that you brought home, and, you know, maybe it's not. You know, maybe you need an investigation yourself. You know, you don't know. So that's what the film is exploring. And I think it's also a good education in, you know, how people can handle that kind of situation. So if there's anybody who'd like to participate, you can email me at paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com. Or you can email me at islandparanormalsociety@gmail.com. And those are two good ways of getting in touch with me. So I'm looking forward to hearing anybody's stories and experiences. If you're in the local area, like Long Island, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, then I'd like to, you know, film your experience. So can't wait to put that together. So anything
that sounds like that. That's really exciting.
Yeah, I can't wait. I want to, like, do it now, but, you know, I want to do it right at the same time, you know. So I kind of want to take my time with it and make sure it's done good and that, you know, that it's enjoyable, you know, for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, just try to do it, you know, for the right reasons. That's what I'm all about. But I want everybody to have a good weekend. And I don't know, Tim, anything else to add before I say goodbye to the listeners?
No, it was a great show. It was I like listening to Chris.
Yeah.
I enjoy listening to him a lot.
Thank you to Chris DeCesare. Thank you to Billy Edwards from Sidehead Productions. Thank you to Alan Lewis. You know, once again, thank you to all those who, you know, tuned in tonight. And if you want to give us feedback, we always welcome feedback. You know, paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com. Look us up on Facebook. Don't be intimidated by our healthy skepticism that we tend to debate about here and there. You know, we're not here to scare anybody away or discourage anybody. We just want people to get more involved with proper method and research and offer an education in the paranormal.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, everybody, have a good night. Enjoy your weekend. And until the next time.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. We broadcast live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Don't be intimidated by the hosts. We would love to get your feedback about our show, whether it is good or bad. You can leave comments on our Blog Talk webpage or email us privately at paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com. Would you like to interact with other listeners or the host during the show? register free with Blog Talk Radio to chat with us live during the show. You can also look us up on Facebook, answer questions and polls, and get the latest news. Until next time, see you on the other side.